Welcome to My Therapist Is Out, an open space therapy collective podcast. We are your hub for queer and trans mental health care. Each episode, we talk with one of our open space therapists or LGBTQ community member about mental health and building community. I am your host, Renee Johnson, they, them. Founder of Open Space Therapy Collective, I'm a licensed therapist and an art therapist. I specialize in working with queer artists who are exploring their gender identity and recovering from complex trauma.
As we dive into today's topic, please keep in mind that this is a mental health podcast. We will talk about sensitive and difficult issues that are not appropriate for all audiences. Please take care while listening.
Welcome back to My Therapist Is Out. We have a really great conversation today, and this was a really tricky one. So our therapist, Jenny Nigro, they, them, and I sat down and talked about intergenerational trauma. We recorded this podcast in January, and we reference a lot of what's happening with the genocide in Gaza. So by the time the podcast come out, we might be in a little bit of a different space with what's going on there. But we really get into what generational trauma feels like and how that can get passed down. And when we hit into behaviors and feelings that don't feel like they belong to us, or when something is happening to somebody else and we have a big response to it, and really get into the nitty-gritty of what people really mean when they're talking about intergenerational trauma. And Jenny and I talk a little bit about our own experiences with our families of origin and how that can show up with us. Jenny and I both have very different backgrounds and very different experiences of the way that the intergenerational trauma presents in our lives. So we dive into that a little bit. It's a big one, and it was definitely an emotional one for me to talk about. And Jenny is a great, obviously a wonderful therapist, and really holds a lot of professional knowledge in this space, in their ability to talk about it. So let's dive into the conversation with Jenny. Let me know what you think. This is a rich one, so there's a lot of content in there, and we would love to hear from you. You can email us at info@openspacetherapycollective, or you can message us on the social medias, leave a comment below in this video, and we will see you in a couple weeks. Welcome to My Therapist Is Out, an Open Space Therapy Collective podcast. I'm your host, Renee, and we have one of our therapists with us today, Jenny Nigro. It's so good to have you back.
Thank you.
It's been a minute.
It has been, yes.
Happy 2024.
Uh-huh. Yeah. That's not a real year.
No. No.
That's we're a Star not that Trek old. Year.
So today we're going to talk about intergenerational trauma. We get a lot of questions about this, and a lot of the people that we see that come into therapy have this going on, and it's really hard to define. What about this topic got you interested?
What about this topic got me interested? I would say my personal interest in this topic just stems from my own family history and previous generations going through genocide, noticing how that shows up in myself and people around me, people in my family, and looking into it more and seeing all of the different types of collective experiences that can produce traumatic reactions. It's a really interesting topic. It's one that has gotten more attention in recent years, more research, more is still needed, obviously. But I just find it really fascinating.
Yeah. Yeah. The ripple effects of intergenerational trauma is really interesting. And sometimes it's learned behavior. Sometimes it's gets in your DNA. It's just layered and layered and layered. Mm-hmm. What is intergenerational trauma? How would you define that for somebody who's unfamiliar with this?
Yeah. Intergenerational trauma, also known as generational trauma, occurs when your ancestors, people in your family, have gone through traumatic events or had experiences, and those reactions can be passed down to their descendants, whether that's through modifications in their genes as a response to the trauma that is genetically passed down, or whether it's behaviors that have been learned to protect them from the traumas, and those are passed down through the social environment. It could be both a combination. It could be a secret third thing that we have yet to discover. Mm-hmm. And that inheriting of trauma response, whether genetically or socially, is referred to as intergenerational trauma.
What's an example of a behavior that would be learned that would be like a trauma behavior mm-hmm. that I've adapted that then I would pass on to mm-hmm. a kid?
An example might be, well, let's say that your parents grew up in a very racist environment. Mm-hmm. Let's say they grew up during a racist time. All the times
are racist. Anytime in the American history?
Anytime in the American history. Let's say they were living in a community where they were specifically targeted and discriminated because of their race. And mm-hmm. there were explicit laws passed, there was a social and cultural like movement targeting people of that race, mm-hmm. whether it's African Americans at any given point in time, Japanese Americans during World War II, other Asian Americans in the pandemic era, countless examples. If you lived through that, you may have developed a trauma response that could look like hypervigilance, not trusting anyone, manifesting in behaviors like isolating yourself, crossing to the other side of the street, not interacting with people. And if your child does not live in that type of environment, you are still imparting those behaviors that you have learned as a natural response.
I think that's a really good example. And I think that's something that most people can relate to who've experienced some level of discrimination like that. And especially as we're going from like boomers to Gen X to millennial to Gen Z and now alpha, we're seeing this, I think, a little bit more clearly in the differences and different ways that in times people are brought up. Because when you are somebody who's created that behavior or taken on that behavior from the original trauma, it's really important that you have that, right? It's really important if you are a Black person in the South in the 40s that you walk to the other side of the street so you don't get attacked. Like, please, like, do that. Mm-hmm. And there's nothing wrong with that. It's then when that gets passed down and passed down, and now you have a Gen Alpha kid who, there is still racism, I'm not trying to say that there's not, but doesn't have to necessarily walk to the other side of the street, but is automatically doing it, that distrust starts to get built in, that avoidance starts to get built in, that isolation starts to get built in, and it may not need to be to such that intense degree. And then can create more interpersonal problems for the Gen Alpha kid that isn't as relevant because it's not the 1940s anymore.
Yes, exactly. They will still carry those residual effects and behaviors, and living like that can be very stressful. Mm-hmm. And I saw something that said, and it stuck with me, like those trauma responses keep us safe, but they don't keep us happy. Mm. And that's something that I think is just very relevant to talking about intergenerational trauma or any type of trauma. Like, yes, there is a purpose to them. They are protective. But when you no longer need those behaviors or responses in order to survive, then, you know, in what ways are they damaging you now? Mm-hmm. Or the people around you, or your ability to connect and, you know, be with family, friends, partners.
Mm-hmm. How do you, and this is a little bit of maybe a tangent, mm-hmm. but how do you know when it's something that you're doing because the situation says, this is scary, you need to protect yourself? And how do you know when you're doing that same behavior in a situation where you don't need to protect yourself, if it gets ingrained? Like, how do you start recognizing that?
If you had actually experienced the traumatic events that are causing a trauma response, your symptoms would look different. You know, you might have flashbacks or intrusive thoughts, nightmares, things like that. Those can happen when you actually experience or directly witness a traumatic event. Mm-hmm. If you have the trauma response that has been passed down, you are not going to have those same symptoms because you didn't personally have that experience. Mm-hmm. So that might be one way to start differentiating. Is this an intergenerational trauma response, or is this something I've individually developed based on my own lived experience?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes me think of like fear and anxiety. Mm-hmm. Because when these trauma responses get passed down, they also can be, the emotions that are attached to them can be learned. And I think this comes in with some of the DNA changes, is we can all hear people say, like, I'm really freaked out about this thing, but I don't know why. Mm-hmm. And like that, like, I don't know why, mm-hmm. or like this feels like it's not coming from me, it's just happening, mm-hmm. is, it can be a really great cue, like, oh, this might be a generational thing and not something that I'm creating for myself.
Yeah, yeah. And I've had that experience personally, like having a response to something, you know, seeing or hearing something that triggers a feeling in me, and I have no point of reference for it. Mm-hmm. I have never had that experience myself, mm-hmm. but my body feels like it has, and it has a response. Mm-hmm.
Totally. Yeah. Like, now that you're saying that, I'm like, oh yeah, duh. I tend to be very protective of people. Mm-hmm. And there's, I've not been subject to an experience that would require that. Mm-hmm. I've got plenty of my own shit, but like, not that one. That's
not one of them. Yeah.
And that's something that I've had to work on, of like pulling back and being like, mm-hmm. no, nobody needs you to be like Big Papa Bear right now. You can mm-hmm. like chill the fuck out and relax a little bit, and being mm-hmm. like, oh, but I know where in my family's history that they would have needed that.
Yeah.
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 Interesting.
So yeah. Mindfulness, you know, mm-hmm. like with so many things, pausing, breathing, being in the moment, identifying what's coming from where. Mm-hmm. Easier said than done, obviously. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I wish this stuff was easy. why should we be thinking about intergenerational trauma? Like, it is more in the zeitgeist mm-hmm. right now, but mm-hmm. what's the point? What's the purpose? What does it do for us to be thinking about it?
To be thinking about it? Well, like so many things, you know, it's important to normalize it. It's important to recognize that people have these experiences, especially as we see now. Can I talk about genocide?
Sure, you can talk about whatever you want.
Like the current genocide? Mm-hmm. Okay. You know, I think right now, a lot of people may be having a traumatic response to the genocide that's currently happening. Mm-hmm. And if you are a person who has those experiences in your family history, it's going to hit you differently. Mm-hmm. You might feel a level of like grief and anguish that, again, you have not lived through it in your lifetime, mm-hmm. but your grandparents, great-grandparents, great-great-grandparents did. Mm-hmm. And those threads of existence are still like operating in you, like we talked about before, whether it's genetically, socially, culturally, all of mm-hmm. the above. And so it's important to recognize where that comes from. It's important to normalize feeling that intense grief, rage, sadness, all of the feelings. Mm-hmm. And it's important not to minimize how people are feeling about mm-hmm. this, mm-hmm. even though you may, you know, there might be a tendency for other people to minimize and say, well, it's not happening to you. Mm-hmm. Well, your body might feel like it is happening to you. Which is not to say that our experience here is comparable in any way to the people who are actually existing under threat of genocide right now, or who are actively being killed, mm-hmm. living in war at this time. It's a completely different thing. Mm-hmm. But I think that's part of why the conversation around intergenerational trauma is more relevant right now, mm-hmm. because we are seeing effects in ourselves that we might not have expected to pop up.
Yeah. You know, a lot of people will come in and be like, well, I should be fine. Other people have it worse. And I think this fits, right? Mm-hmm. Like, the people who have genocide in their family history mm-hmm. are having a really hard time, mm-hmm. even though they're in the States and aren't actively mm-hmm. being killed in the moment. And recognizing this is a very touchy thing to talk about. But those feelings are still important and important to process through. And it doesn't mean that it should take away from the active violence that and murder and genocide that is happening. That still needs to be platformed. That still needs to be stopped. And both things can coexist. Mm-hmm. It's when, and I think that's part of like recognizing your own intergenerational trauma mm-hmm. is saying like, I'm having this experience mm-hmm. and it's not necessarily my experience. Mm-hmm. It's coming up and I'm holding it. And I also need to be present and be in the now and recognize what's happening in real time, mm-hmm. which I think with trauma in general, whether it's something you experienced or it's a family experience, timelines get mushed together all in one thing. Mm-hmm. And it feels like it's all happening right now. And part of this work is stretching that timeline back out and being like, okay, no, the genocide that is currently happening is real and it's active and we need to do something to stop it. And my family's history of genocide is coming up and I clearly need to spend time and treat that for myself.
Yeah.
Did that fit?
I think
okay.
so.
Okay.
That was good.
If someone's starting to recognize that intergenerational trauma is happening, that they're having these symptoms pop up, they don't know where it is, something feels like it's happening right now when it's not, is it going to just like pop out and give somebody a breakdown? Is it going to be kind of stealthy and like get its little tendrils in your day to day? Like how big and how little does this show up?
That's a good question. I think, in my experience, it's more likely to be the little tendrils creeping in. You know, like we talked about before, if you haven't personally experienced it, you're not going to have a flashback, for example. You may have feelings of panic. Mm-hmm. You may notice somatic symptoms, trouble breathing, different manifestations like that. I don't think I've seen anyone have like a major episode because of intergenerational mm-hmm. trauma. I believe it's more stealthy. You know, as it gets passed down, it's diluted, it morphs, comes out in different ways. If you do have this in your family history, it's likely that you have already had some of these it's likely that you might not recognize these symptoms. They might just be part of your day to day.
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, your comment earlier about isolation mm-hmm. is a really good one. There's been a meme popping up periodically that's like, I thought this was my personality and then I realized it's my trauma. And I think it can relate to this too, because if isolation or avoidance of other people has mm-hmm. been something that's learned or adapted, mm-hmm.
and you've kind of been like, oh, well, I'm just an introvert. Mm-hmm. Instead of like exploring that a little bit more, mm-hmm. that can really be one of those things. Like maybe you are an introvert and that's fine. Mm-hmm. Or maybe like you're not and you've kind of just defaulted into the family pattern. Mm-hmm. And so it doesn't always have to be these big mm-hmm. panic attacks, which can happen. Mm-hmm. They can be just kind of these assumptions that you make about yourself.
Yeah. I think another similar example is, you know, it can be framed as resilience or like being able to get through anything. I don't need to go to the doctor. I'm fine. Like just that sort of mentality that people before you in your family have struggled through so much and they survived that like you don't need to do XYZ to take care of yourself mm-hmm. because you're strong, because you're resilient, because your family's been through X, Y, and Z. Mm-hmm. That is a learned, that is a pretty common mm-hmm. learned trait mm-hmm. that, like you said, then gets, can then be taken to be part of your personality.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the stories that we tell about our family and about mm-hmm. ourselves and then that get attached to you mm-hmm. When you're like a little infant even that are like, this little baby's personality hasn't even shown up yet. We don't know, exactly. But we've already created a narrative about them.
Yes. Yes.
Is intergenerational trauma something that happens more to queer and trans people?
This is very interesting. And I think very nuanced. In my non-expert opinion on this subject, I think that queer and trans people are more likely to experience historical or collective trauma, which is the same but different mm-hmm. from intergenerational, doesn't necessarily have the genetic component. Mm-hmm. Historical trauma... I actually have the definition so that we can be clear, meets three criteria: widespread effects, collective suffering, and malicious intent. And queer people have absolutely do experience mm-hmm. historical trauma per that definition. Is it intergenerational in the same way? I don't know, mm-hmm. but it definitely has similarities. When, you know, if you operate as a member of the queer community and you are really connected to that identity, then yes, I do believe you are going to feel the effects of the trauma experienced by previous queer generations. Mm-hmm. Because the collective piece of, you know, the queer community, it's differently, the parameters are different from other types of communities, racial or ethnic or religious communities. We still have a lot of exploring and research to do to understand how we as like modern day queer people have absorbed and interpreted what has happened to our queer and trans ancestors, mm-hmm. our transcestors.
Oh, I love that.
I didn't make it up, but it's cool.
That's so great. Yeah, I'm going to push back on one thing in that you are an expert in this, being a queer trans person yourself and being somebody who's been in the mental health profession for well over a decade, specifically working with queer and trans people. You are the expert in this. But... I love this definition of historical trauma and bringing it in because I think it's really relevant, especially we talk about chosen family so mm-hmm. often. And a lot of us have stepped away from our biofams because mm-hmm. because it's the source of trauma. Mm-hmm. And when so many of us are put in positions where we step away from our biological families into chosen families, and I think this is a place where there hasn't been enough research done, is not only are we getting historical trauma brought in, but we're also, everybody's bringing their own family trauma brought in. Mm-hmm. And Debbie did a podcast with us a month ago, a couple months ago, about being rejected from your biological family. Mm-hmm. And like that coming into our queer community is as a constant re-traumatization, mm-hmm. I think also plays into this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And because it is such a common experience that becomes part of our collective queer trauma. Mm-hmm. And even if you don't personally have that experience, you are still like feeling the collective grief of that rejection.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
A lot of targeted attacks that inflict trauma, genocide, segregation, whatever the case may be, are based on a person's identity. And for queer people, you know, our collective, our group, our connection is because of our identity. And historical attempts to erase that, even current day attempts to erase that, mm-hmm. to stop people from using words about the queer community, to stop people from incorporating pronouns into their language or, you know, using them mm-hmm. as identifiers the way that we do.
Yeah, it's really about like the core self,
yeah.
right? It's yeah. not about, I like the color purple and this group of people doesn't
right.
like the color purple and they really right. hate it. So they think I'm dumb. It's really an attack on somebody's core self. Mm-hmm. And we see that with race. We see that with religion. We see that with
culture.
Thank you. And queerness, I think, is one of those spaces where it's not necessarily biologically passed down in the same way. Mm-hmm. And so one of the things, for example, that's come up recently is that people are really comfortable or don't necessarily think they need as much education about queer culture because everybody knows somebody that's queer. Everybody knows somebody that looks like them that's queer. And so it's not, it can also be really minimized and dismissed, and there can be a microaggression in that way of that entire identity culture group. Where in other things, especially in the past several years that have come up, that's like specific types of people that not everybody can identify and connect with. Mm-hmm. And so with the historical trauma that comes in to queer and trans culture, it can be a little confusing because it's not just this one group of people from this one place.
Right.
How do you start the healing process? Whether it's historical trauma from our queer identities or it's intergenerational trauma from our family?
It's a great question. And with so many mental health issues, I think it just always starts with normalizing what's going on for you, talking about it. Having a queer therapist perhaps mm-hmm. might help. Like we talked about before, validating the feelings you're feeling, even if they're connected to an experience that is not your own. Mm-hmm. Honoring those feelings. And I think a lot about finding a way to honor the people that came before you who lived through these things, whether that's your biological ancestors, your queer predecessors. Learning about their experiences, talking about their experiences, understanding how those have shaped you, whether directly through your environment or in sneaky ways that we don't know, gives you a context for what might be happening in your life, a mm-hmm. historical context. Mm-hmm. And like you talked about before, stretching the timeline back out. I love that visual of like stretching out the timeline. Narrative therapy is really great for this. Mm-hmm. And seeing what stories you've told yourself, what stories your family or your community or people who don't even know you have told you about yourself or that you have interpreted to be about you mm-hmm. that may not be And what is the alternate narrative that you might want to begin to construct mm-hmm. about your life moving forward?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that. That's really important to recognize what's happening, which is really difficult work to begin with, and then change it, mm-hmm. right? And so if it's reconstructing that narrative, like, oh, this part doesn't fit, this does, I'll keep that, and we're going to give that back to grandma. And sometimes it's recognizing what your family didn't do mm-hmm. To keep this trauma passing down, right? Mm-hmm. And so doing that thing to help give some kind of ending to it, so you can have that narrative that fits you.
Yeah, exactly. It's not inevitable that these traumas are passed down. Mm-mm. There are things that we can do to facilitate healing. Mm-hmm. And I like what you said about like keeping what feels right to you and letting go of the rest of it. I mean, I don't want to erase, you know, my knowledge of my family's history or of queer history. Like, it's important to me to recognize and honor those experiences and to like honor how they show up in me. Mm-hmm. But I can also do that while deciding to not let the effects influence my behavior in ways that are damaging and mm-hmm. or that are not like helpful for my growth and happiness. Mm-hmm. You know, like we said before, the trauma maybe has kept us safe, but it doesn't make me happy. Like,
no, that's not gonna happen.
No.
Yeah. Yeah. It's resolving the unresolved, mm-hmm. which is a really intense process, mm-hmm. But can mm-hmm. really be life-changing.
Yeah. And I think it can be a lifelong process, and mm-hmm. and that's okay.
Mm-hmm. That's totally. Okay.
And it might not ever be resolved, and mm-hmm. sometimes that's okay too. Mm-hmm. But having a space where you can feel safe enough to discuss it.
It's a lot to talk about, period. It's a lot to have your own experience of trauma while you're talking about this. It's a lot right now. Mm-hmm. Like the big genocide that's happening, we're recording this in January, so there's already 300 plus anti-trans bills that have gone out. It's just a lot. Mm-hmm. But it is important to talk about, because I know a lot of people have questions and that mm-hmm. can feel really scary. So to have you in their ears mm-hmm. Was a very gentle way to start getting familiar with the topic.
It feels like by talking about it, I'm just getting familiar myself, because, you know, you can read and process things internally, mm-hmm. but until you like express it some way to mm-hmm. a person or to, you know, the void, mm-hmm. It just brings another like layer of reality. Mm-hmm. And it is very hard. Like, clearly you don't need to have resolved everything to be able to talk about it. Cause like, hello,
we're here.
Here we are.
Yeah. So to switch gears a little bit, part of why trauma can happen is it happens in isolation. And as we talk about all the time, therapy is just one piece of the healing process. You need community to heal and grow and be happy. What is an example of connection for you with your queer community in the past couple weeks?
I don't know. Give me some examples that normal people have, and I'll see if I had any of them.
You did that New Year's thing with your friend and the art making stuff.
They were all straight.
Oh. You did the holiday queer stained glass craft festival.
Oh. Yeah. Oh, okay. I have a good one. So where I live, there's this wonderful queer library.
Ooh.
And it is amazing because I don't know why I didn't think of this earlier, but it holds like all of our queer history.
Oh, wow.
It's like an archive and has, you know, all of like the modern queer romances that you want to read, and everyone there is queer. So it's a space where I really feel that connection to people currently who are queer and in the community, and at the same time to, like, you know, the transcestors, because their stories are all collected in that space.
That's incredible.
Yeah. It's really special. It's really special. And I wish that everyone could experience that.
Yeah. When I come up and visit, we'll have to go. That sounds amazing. Yeah. I was just gotta feel so good to walk in there.
Yeah. Yeah. And awesome. You see, like, just all the volumes of gay that exist in one space. And it just makes you feel like, you know, maybe if you're someone who doesn't have a connection to your biological family lineage, as a queer person, you can walk in and see, like, your queer family history.
Yeah.
It's documented. It's there. You can read it. You can share it. It's really great.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Oh, I love that.
Took me like 8 years to think of it.
It's okay. It'll be edited, so nobody will know, except for Alex. Thank you so much for joining us today for this very complicated topic, obviously. If you have any questions, shoot us an email, comment below. We're happy to continue talking about this. I think we've got some Q&As coming up again soon, and happy to fold in some of the intergenerational questions, because this is heavy and confusing.
Yeah, and we just barely scratched the surface, honestly.
Yeah. Like, this is in, like, a lot. The prereq to the 101 class.
Exactly. Yeah. Okay, that makes me feel better. Thank you for putting it that way.
You can find us on Instagram and TikTok and YouTube at Open Space Therapy Collective. You can always shoot us an email at info@openspacetherapycollective.com. And we will see you again in 2 weeks. Thanks so much, Jenny.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us. If you're in California and looking for a therapist, visit our website at openspacetherapycollective.com and book a free intro call with one of our therapists. If you're enjoying My Therapist Is Out, please rate, review, and follow us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and YouTube. My Therapist Is Out is an Open Space Therapy Collective podcast. Our therapists are Renee Johnson, Kristen Crow, Debbie White, Jenny Nigro, and Tara Friedman. Our podcast editing is done by Smash and Grab Studio. We'd love to hear from you about today's topic, so you can email us at info@openspacetherapycollective.com. You can find us on TikTok and Instagram at My Therapist Is Out and Open Space Therapy Collective. Thanks for listening.